Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
And a good morning to one and all. A little overcast on a Saturday here in San Francisco. A couple of days after the fact, the San Francisco 49ers at the 500 mark, 3-3, sit atop the NFC West. I'm joined by my man Sterling Bennett. Sterling, what's going on with you this morning?
It's going well. The wife's out of town. It's me and the pooch. We're having a good day. Celebrate the Niners win on Thursday. Yeah, it's great. Sun's out here in Hesperia, California, all the way down here near Las Vegas. So the sun's out. The dog's having a good time, and I hope you're having a good time too, Dan.
That's right. You're in that witness protection program. Where the hell are you these days?
Yeah, I'm in Hesperia, California, in between Barstow and Rancho Cucamonga, middle of the desert, witness protection, and got nobody out here that knows where I'm at. It is almost the perfect recluse style that I like to live, so we're having some fun.
You're not one of those part of like a militia group out there that's looking to take over the world, are you? What kind of dog are we talking about, Sterling?
He's like a lab mix. He's definitely a mutt for sure. He's a pound dog. But no militia style here. We may have the Costco, judgment day, whatever you want to call it, packs ready to go in case the world goes to hell. But no militia style here.
Okay, really quick, before we get into the 49ers, let's talk about things that are obviously a little bit more pressing and important. You mentioned Costco. The pizza and the hot dog at Costco, a bit overrated in my estimation, or no? Where are you at with the Costco hot dog?
It's still $1.50. I mean, it's a deal. Let's be honest, Dan. You go to Costco, you're buying in bulk, you get your chicken, you get your meat, you get whatever else you're going to buy. You're sitting there, you're just seeing the price go up and up and up, and you go, you know, I spent $500 on food. $1.50 for a hot dog that may not be that great doesn't sound too bad right now. So I am all pro for the Costco hot dog and pizza.
Dan, I'm telling you, there are people that swear by that dog. They're like, Dan, I'm telling you, you get the best pizza slices at Costco, and I've tried it, and I'm like, you're drunk.
Well,
that is not correct.
Well, now you
correct.
Have the Costco family with the double chunk chocolate cookies and the chicken bacon, the Rizzler, and Big Justice. There's Costco families now on social media.
Costco is like you're getting ready for the end of the world. Like, do you really need that much mayonnaise? It's crazy stuff. All right. One thing that we got a lot of course, on Thursday with the San Francisco 49ers coming up with that win over Seattle. I just want to get your initial thoughts. Were you impressed? Are they back? Or are you one of those that's like, I need to see more because, you know, let's face it, Seattle still was within striking distance in the closing moments of that game. How'd you see it, Sterling?
Are they back? No. Was it a good win, though? Yes. You're 3-3. You're in first place in the NFC West, for now at least, depending on what the Cardinals do tomorrow. You had to get it. Your back's against the wall. It's a short week. You're banged up. If you lose that game, you're 2-4. You've lost three consecutive NFC West games. You're 0-3 in the division, and the odds you win that division are basically in the dump. You can't be there. And San Francisco said, you know what? We're going to go in Lumen Field, short week, hostile crowd, and we're going to put up 36 points against Seattle. Was it perfect? No, but I don't know how you leave that game not somewhat impressed with what San Francisco did.
So, of course, you do the post-game show. I'm curious, taking the pulse of the fans afterwards, look, we all know there's overreaction, the ebb and flow from week to week, but what was sort of the sentiment collectively, if you could sort of sum it up in terms of where the fans are at?
Funny enough, it was kind of a mixed bag, right? Some fans were excited. They were like, yes, finally beat Seattle. Anytime you go into Seattle and win, that's a big deal for this team. It's been a house of horrors for 25 plus years.
Well, not lately, because the Seahawks, and especially Purdy, has pretty much owned that team, but go ahead.
They've won six consecutive games, but even then, there's been some diciness. 2019, Dre Greenlaw's big tackle at the goal line, but yes, in recent years, it's been a trouncing of the Seahawks, if you will, but fans were like, it was a great win, you're in Seattle, you got the win, you're banged up, great, whereas some fans, and one of them more particular, was like, this is what we're happy about? Like, you almost lost this game. It was 23-17, a one-score game, and had it not been for an interception, you could have lost. And so I do think that the fan base, the way the year started, being up and down roller coaster ride, I think are somewhat jaded because of the expectations coming into the season of Super Bowl or bust. You should be 5-0 at this point, 6-0 at this point, but nobody's like that. The Chiefs have squeaked out victories left and right. The Vikings have looked like the best team in football, which we all know that the gas is probably going to run out eventually with Minnesota. So definitely a mixed bag from Niner fans after the win on Thursday.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The Minnesota Vikings undefeated along with Kansas City. And right now, if you were to rate the two top quarterbacks out of the NFC, it would have to be Sam Darnold and Brock Purdy. Maybe not necessarily in that order. And just to think that this time a year ago, they were both on that 49er roster just goes to show you that San Francisco had some depth a year ago. I do want to talk about Brock Purdy because I firmly believe that this guy has established himself as one of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL. Now, I know I may be overstating the obvious, but I like to think of myself as sort of a perfect example of somebody that's been slow to the party when it comes to Brock Purdy, and maybe I speak for a lot of people. I know that there are some that the minute they saw him, like, oh, Brock Purdy, yes, this is the guy. I saw a quarterback that was, and still is, barely 6 feet on a good day. The optics just bothered me with this guy, and I'll admit it. You know, that should not factor into anybody's decision, but it did. I see this guy, and I'm like, he looks like somebody out of Iowa State that played for 4 years. He looks like somebody that was in the seventh round and was the last player chosen. And quite frankly, I don't want those kind of guys quarterbacking my team. I want somebody who's 6'4" coming off the plane that is a perennial All-American that went to a blue blood like that, a USC, Texas, LSU, or Alabama. So I think a lot of this, Sterling, is just, it's the visual hurdle a lot for a lot of people, including myself. Would you agree? Would you say that there's something there to any of that?
Sometimes the world views quarterbacks the way John Elway wanted to, where they got to be 6'7", they have to have a chiseled jawline, they have to have the long flowing hair and be able to go out there and stand out in the crowd. And Brock Purdy doesn't do that. He's a JCPenney catalog model. He's got the sweaters on. He's a shorter guy. He's humble. He goes to Iowa and shucks corn during the bye week. He's not a guy you point to and say, you know, that's my franchise quarterback. But funny enough, despite all of those things, despite the media saying he ain't the guy, despite not having the greatest arm talent or the fastest 40 time, he wins almost every single week. He's played at an MVP level for about a year and a half now, although this year has been, you know, probably his best year so far, despite losing three games. When I watched Brock Purdy for the first time, admittedly, it was in training camp. It was Trey Lance, Jimmy G's on the side field, and you kind of just go, hey, Brock Purdy, seventh round pick. Well, he, what is he doing here? You know, right? He's not going to make this team, but that's the Brock Purdy story, right? He's not big enough. He's not strong enough. Seventh round pick, and he defies all those odds, and continually, when, whether it's us or the media nationally, says he's not good enough, continues to prove he's more than good enough to win big games.
Yeah, you talked about Brock Purdy during a bye week or the offseason, the guy shucking corn, which leads me to this. What the hell is this guy going to do with a $60 million contract? It's just like, how many John Deere's can you buy?
He has the deal now, so he doesn't have to buy him at all.
Does he really?
Yeah,
he has an endorsement with John Deere.
Yeah.
Well, here's where I'm at with this guy. And again, I hope for maybe I speak for some of you out there that are listening this morning when we talk about Brock Purdy. When I saw this guy, I'm like, yeah, that's maybe an abridge to whoever it is that you're going to pull out of the draft in the next couple of years, or maybe a free agent you're going to bring to San Francisco. And quite frankly, at the time, on the record saying, you know, as soon as Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy, put him back into the lineup. But Brock Purdy then just grew on me. I'm like, okay, this guy can go through his progression. Maybe he doesn't have the strongest arm, but he's smart, and he knows where to go, and he's not going to lose you games. And then going into this season, I said, no, Brock Purdy is a good quarterback. Like, I gradually came along, but I still qualified it at, he's a system quarterback. But there's nothing wrong with that because he happens to be running. Well, no, because I qualified it, Sterling, by saying, yeah, that's okay because he happens to be running the best system in the NFL. Right. It's Kyle Shanahan's system. So if you're running that system, that's fine. And Kyle Shanahan has been in search of this guy for his entire tenure here with San Francisco over the last 7 years. And now he has the best player since he's been in San Francisco to execute and be the architect of his innovative offense. So the system works. And I think he was a system quarterback. And if it's Kyle Shanahan, well, who the hell cares if you're a system quarterback, because you're going to win Super Bowls. And now, he's not a system quarterback.
No.
This dude is doing it on his own. This guy is buying time. He is running with the football. He's playing. What was the one knock on him? Okay, what are you going to do when you don't have Debo? What are you going to do when you don't have Kittle? Right. Brandon Ayuk's not there. Well, all those guys have been out, including Christian McCaffrey. And what he does is that he's buying time, waiting for guys to get separation. And he's about as close to a one-man show this side of Patrick Mahomes that you're going to find in the NFL. So I've gone from a guy that I don't want to be my quarterback to, like, he's okay, he's a system quarterback, to now he's right up there in the conversation with Patrick Mahomes.
Well, it's funny enough that, well, I wouldn't go that high for Brock Purdy. I do think we have seen that with Brock. You've seen the growth being kind of played out as the games go by. Year one comes in against the Dolphins. Jimmy G hurts the ankle. Season looks lost. Nick Bosa said himself, I thought it was over. Brock comes out and plays a heck of a game against one of the best teams at the time, wins that one, then beats Tom Brady, then goes with broken or bruised ribs into Seattle, short week, and wins that game. You start to see, okay, this kid has something to him, and now you fast forward 2.5 years to, you know, Brock is no longer, or should no be longer, categorized as a system quarterback. Yes, there are things he struggles with, as all quarterbacks do, but what Brock Purdy has been able to do has been transcendent for one of the greatest offensive systems in the current NFL. And you can't say that for players like Jimmy Garoppolo, who was good in his own right, but had a lot of hindrances
easy.
In how he plays. I know he's your guy, Dan. But even then, Brock's out playing guys like Trevor Lawrence and Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins, guys that have already been given these massive contracts or were drafted number one overall. Brock Purdy walked into a situation where he was the fourth quarterback in a room, outplayed the incumbent vet starter, outplayed the number three overall pick, and outplayed the vet that was given guaranteed money in front of him. So what Brock Purdy has done has defied every logical take you were supposed to have when he got here. And again, while it's not been perfect so far this year, there have been some hiccups here and there, some turnovers against the Cardinals and whatnot, but he has taken over an offensive system that was already scoring 26, 28 points a game and said, you know what? There's a level we haven't even reached yet. Let's go that far with it. And that's what Brock Purdy's done.
Yeah, I would admit, and I'm with you, I think that game against Arizona might have been one of his worst as a starter. He just wasn't Brock Purdy, and he bounced back against Seattle clearly the other night.
Yeah.
And not only was he hitting guys, that dime he dropped to Kittle in the corner of the end zone.
Ooh.
Like, that is, who makes that
dime
throw? Beyond the outstretched arms of love. I mean, it was just so, you could not walk it to George Kittle and place it in his hands any better than where it is that he threw that dime. You know, it's funny, we're talking and giving him a hard time. Like, what's he going to do with all that money sitting on a farm out in Iowa? You know what he's got to do? He's got to come up. So everybody has their own clothing line, like Serena Williams, but it's athletic apparel, right? So my suggestion to Brock Purdy is that you get the first cool farming clothing line, right? Like something that's bring back fleece, get the
some
new
overalls,
cap.
Some flannels.
Get the flannels, but have it designed so it's a way that it's like, you know, it's got street cred. That's where you go with that first, you know, with that 60. And I think, Sterling, correct me if I'm wrong, and you may think I'm, you know, I'm high at 9:15 in the morning. I am not. I'll do the blood test. I'll pee into a cup right now. But I'll tell you that this man could get, there could be a seven digit in front of that contract, meaning 70 plus next year. We'll have to wait and see. But that's my first suggestion, is go get a cool clothing line and have it being farming apparel. Your thoughts?
Well, and if you're lucky, you get Nick Bosa, who already is doing the skim ads for Kim Kardashian. You get Bosa with the nice flannel, the shirt untucked, their abs out. Those things will sell like hotcakes. I mean, there is a way for Brock Purdy to make millions off of flannels and John Deere-sponsored clothing lines. And also, look, farming boys are in now. Country boys are in. This is a market Brock Purdy might have to tap into sooner rather than later.
Spoken like a true kid from Oklahoma, baby.
There you go.
Speaking of George Kittle and Juszczyk, did you have any issues with him jumping in and hugging the wife? I mean, I did it once. You know how people online get. They're like,
that
was too much to see it a second and a third time. That was overkill. Where are you at?
I mean, if you don't want him to celebrate, don't let them score. I mean, like, come on. It's like baseball, right? You don't want to see a bad flip or the pitcher yelling on the mound. Get a base hit. Get a strikeout. Get the guy out, you know? Dodger fans are going to be angry at Tatis and Machado doing things. Get those guys out. Did last night, but I digress. Who cares? if Claire and Christian want to sit in the front row, watch their husbands play, wouldn't you expect their husbands to give them a shout-out at a certain point during the game? That happens in high school baseball when the girlfriends are there, when you know they're not going to last more than 2 months. They're like, that's my girl in the corner. And you're like, okay, buddy, call me in 2 months. Your wife's out there. Go in the stands for all I care.
You know, I was on the sidelines when Terrell Owens pulled out the Sharpie gate. He had Sharpie and a pen in his sock the entire game, signed the football. Awesome move. But I was on the sideline, so I do not want to hear it from Seahawk fans that was overkill when it comes to extracurricular activities after scoring a touchdown. But just getting back to the San Francisco 49ers, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And we know statistically trying to get back to that Super Bowl after losing one and winning it, it's only happened once in the history of the Super Bowl, that being the New England Patriots. After getting beaten by Philadelphia, they went back the following year and somehow beat the Rams despite scoring just 13 points. But that's the only time it's happened. And so we understand the pressure the 49ers are under. And it's not going to look good. And I said this before the beginning of the season. It's going to be a struggle. And so, to your point that if you want this team to be perfect out of the gates, I never thought it was going to happen. This has never changed. And this is applicable to anybody that's sniffing a wild card or is in the conversation of potentially getting out of their conference and getting to a Super Bowl this year, which includes maybe, what, 5 or 6 teams right now, 7 teams?
Yeah.
You got to peak at the right time. And that's always been the case. And so, yeah, I know. You do a post-game show, and everybody overreacts, and you take the temperature of the people, and we're all emotional when it comes to these sort of things. But you eradicate those mistakes, and you just want to be hitting your stride when it comes to the time when you've got to take out that parka, or you're putting on the hoodie for the first time this year, or throwing on the scarf and the gloves, meaning when the calendar turns and it's December or it's January. That's when you need to be healthy. That's when you got to be playing your best football. So everything, as far as I'm concerned, September has now just become an extended preseason. What's up is down. What's down is up. Who the hell knows? I would never bet on football games in September. It's meaningless. And now you're beginning to see, just as we get into October, okay, who are the pretenders and who are the contenders? People are beginning to rear their head. And I think that this is going to be a sojourn for San Francisco as Brock Purdy continues to grow with confidence, the emergence and the blend of these established veterans, and now the rookies, that San Francisco is in good position despite everybody saying that it was the end of the world, the end of the run as far as the Niners were concerned.
I don't know why anybody would say it was the end of the run. Yeah, it's been tough. There's been some games you should have won, the Rams game being the biggest example of that, the Cardinals game also in that group, but the NFL's tough. Sometimes people forget, you know, with the stacked roster, it doesn't matter how many injuries or guys that goes down, like, you're going to be undefeated. That's not going to happen. This defense has a new defensive coordinator. They have 4 starters not playing right now. They have to have rookies step up and make big plays, which they did against Seattle on Thursday. But then the offense hasn't found their rhythm. The red zone offense has been rather atrocious through 5-6 games so far this year. But, you know, the Vikings are undefeated. Are the Vikings going to be a team you're scared about in the playoffs? Maybe, if they continue. But what are the odds that continues? And they're 7-0. They're 10-0. That's not going to happen. Some teams are going to get hot. Some teams are going to get, you know, cold at the right or wrong times. And so I go back to last year, the Packers, right? Everyone overhyped Jordan Love coming into the year, and I think he can be a great quarterback, but they got hot at the right time. Second half, Jordan Love was a top 5 quarterback in football. They walk into Jerry World in Dallas and just take it to the Cowboys. Almost beat San Francisco as well, so it's not as if San Francisco, like, at this moment, it's more of just survive. Yeah, you want to thrive. Of course you do. You can get a, you know, first round bye if you're the number 1 seed. But while fans, I think, have maybe bought into the Christian McCaffrey savior of the season mentality too much, there is something to that. Okay, after the bye week, you get out there, you're 4-4, you're 5-4, whatever it may be. You're in Tampa Bay on a Sunday. You get CMC back. You hit your stride in the last 2 months of the year. Well, maybe you are a top 4 seed. Maybe you are the number 1 seed again, and you're hosting 2 or 3 playoff games. Like, there is a world where San Francisco's early season struggles, although it can come back to bite them, no one's even talking about those in 4 months.
You mentioned Christian McCaffrey coming back. Really? Do you think he's coming back this year?
I have been on the keep him off the field as long as possible, because when you have bilateral Achilles tendonitis, that thing can flare up at any time. Doesn't matter the game, the day. You sleep wrong. Oh, my calf. Oh, my Achilles. I can't play today, coach. And so it's like, I want to see him back. He's a reigning offensive player of the year for a reason. But even if it takes until December, Christmas Day, whatever it may be for him, he just has to be back for the playoffs. That's all I care about. That is the most important time of the year. And if you want to win it all and you get CMC back, look out rest of the NFL, because this team should be reaching their stride then.
I just, when I hear Achilles and everything that he's dealing with, the only remedy is rest. And then you could rest for months and get out on the field, and then all of a sudden it hurts. So whether he comes back, I don't think anybody knows. And I hate to go here, but the career could be hanging in the balance. I'm probably not saying anything that people don't haven't already thought about. But I think that Christian McCaffrey, in terms of counting on him and him being one of those guys when you quote-unquote, as I said, peak, I think it's going to be Jordan Mason. It's going to be a lot of Isaac Garendo, a guy that you pointed out. Remember, I did a show with you. Remember that back in the day before? I sure as hell said, what? What are you, is that Swahili? What's Isaac Garendo? What is that? And it was my man Sterling Bennett, who knows that draft as well as anybody, and you said, watch out, this kid kind of fits the mode of what the 49ers want to do. And, of course, out of Louisville, here he comes, and he's been a huge star. Why don't we just stay with the running back scenario? Because, again, and I do want to talk about what somebody, there was an interesting point made out on the text line about, is it the system or the quarterback? And I want to address that in a matter of moments. But speaking of which, is it the system or is it the running back when it comes to the 49ers? Because now we're getting to number four and five on the depth chart.
Yeah.
And Isaac Garendo and Patrick Taylor, and it's as though you're not missing a beat. What do you think?
I think more so than the quarterback, the running back is a system running back. Now, Christian McCaffrey is his own beast and animal. You saw him take off in this offense, but also he was great before even getting to San Francisco. But we've seen even pre-Christian McCaffrey. Now, you had Matt Breida and Tevin Coleman and Jeff Wilson Jr. and Raheem Mostert and guys that were undrafted free agents that bounced around to seven different practice squads. And now this year, Jordan Mason, Isaac Garendo, fourth-round pick, Patrick Taylor, a special teamer that was on the Packers last year. They didn't bring him back. Now he's playing well in prime time for Kyle Shanahan. So I think if anything, you want to talk about system quarterbacks, I think Kyle Shanahan's system is a system running back system. Like anybody can go back there and have success.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And when we talk about Kyle Shanahan, it really is handed down from Mike Shanahan, the secret sauce, and Bobby Turner. I don't know who came up with this, but this is
perfect.
It's a family secret. You know, when you go to someone's house for Thanksgiving and they put on that gravy, or they bring out that side dish, and you're like, holy crap, never had that before. And it's just something that is specific, I think, to the Shanahans. And again, listen, I don't want to sound like Bobby Turner. I don't want to sound like one of those coconuts that's pretending that he plays running back. But a lot of it is just, at least from somebody who's sitting on a couch like the other fat asses and just watching a game, it's just, it looks like you need patience. You know, you just, especially with that stretch zone to the outside, just be patient and wait for that thing to pop so you can cut it back. And I think Isaac Garendo, it's just reps, right? Like anything else.
Yeah.
And Patrick Taylor, it's just you need reps and just the ability to wait on those blocks and then be able to get into that rhythm like that of Jordan Mason. But you're right. I think it's a system, and it's been a proven system. Hey, look back in the day when Shanahan, and I'm talking about Shanahan Sr., Mike Shanahan, and Bobby Turner had that thing going with Denver. They would turn out 1,000, and I'm talking 1,000-yard rushers by the year.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Terrell Davis. It was Mike Anderson, and the list went on. I mean, it was guys that were sort of, you know, one-hit wonders, but getting an opportunity to do it in Denver. And the same holds true now some 10, 15 years later with the 49ers, that I'm with you, that if you're going to miss a star, you don't want Christian McCaffrey not available to you. You're just not as good of a football team. But because it's the running back position, I'm still comfortable that they can get to and win a Super Bowl and not have it be the deterrent, or at the end of the year, I do not think, and I said this as soon as he went down, that while he makes the team better, he's not going to be the reason why the 49ers do not win that Super Bowl. This has been proven. Think about the last time they went to a Super Bowl back in 2019 and played Kansas City. They did it with three different guys. It was Coleman, it was Breida, it was Mostert, and it just depended on whoever it is that had the hot hand. And so, as much as you want McCaffrey, the 49ers are going to be okay running the ball. In terms of catching it and the checkdowns and what it is that he could do as being that other wide receiver, well, you know, that's certainly going to be missed. But I think you're going to be okay as far as running backs are concerned and the absence as it relates to one Christian McCaffrey.
I think McCaffrey is missed in the red zone more than anything, but I mean, this team has been successful no matter who's in the backfield across from the quarterback. Jordan Mason's now injured. Does that change? But go back to Thursday night's game for Guerrero as an example. It was kind of like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole for a little bit because he wasn't being patient. And I think for Kyle, he will preach to his running backs, just trust my system. Trust the blocks and the holes are going to be there for you. And late in the game, you got to get a first down, first play. Boom, 76-yard, massive run. Whether he slid or got tackled, whatever it was, Guerrero iced that game essentially for San Francisco because he was patient, because he trusted that Pooney and McKibbitz and Brentwood open up the hole for him. So, you know, like you said, with reps comes success in a Kyle Shanahan system. So the outlook for running back to me hasn't changed. Now, 10 days should be enough for Mason to get healthy, hopefully, against Kansas City. But my concern has never been the running game for San Francisco. It's when you have, you know, your successful running game and you're passing the ball well, can you actually put the ball in the end zone? That hasn't happened outside of Thursday against Seattle, so fingers crossed those things continue in the right direction as well.
We'll talk about the red zone and the red zone success, especially in that second half with George Kittle getting in a couple of times and Brock Purdy making the connection. We'll detail the 49ers really quick before we get to the break. So if you wanted, I don't know, a cup of sugar, your neighbors out in, because I've never lived in the burbs, like, do you have to get on your little tractor and go a half mile and find somebody, or can you just walk a couple of feet?
It's about a chain link fence around the corner. It's not that far, but I will say we have no sidewalks. It's all dirt. It's dirt patches. There's horses out here. There's stray dogs running around looking for something else to do. But no, there are neighbors right next door to us for sure.
Wow, man, that's good living out there, I suppose. And don't worry, man. I know you're in that witness protection plan. I'll never give you up. Stay out there. All right, we continue. Sterling Bennett from God knows where and somewhere in the. You're in California still, right?
Oh, yeah, SoCal. Okay. Oh, yeah.
We'll talk to Sterling Bennett some more about the 49ers, continue to break it down, and we'll get into it. I do want to talk about what the 925 brought up, and is it the quarterback that makes the system, or is it the other way around? And we'll apply that to the 49ers, and we continue here on 95.7 The Game.
Back to 95.7 The Game.
Sterling Bennett and Dan Abone. My man Cam producing. Steven Rizzotto also alongside as we continue to talk about the San Francisco 49ers. We'll see where things take us and maybe we can get into some postseason baseball. Things still undecided out there in the ALCS, but the NLCS, oh, come on, Metropolitans. It's the New York, OMG Mets taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers. And, of course, I don't know, I can't speak for everybody out there, but whoever it is that the Dodgers are playing, I certainly can get a cheer for that other team. And that being the Mets, and the Mets being a remarkable story this year. I mean, I was in on the Mets a long time ago, so I hope they kick the crap out of the Dodgers. And the Dodgers will fold, as they do every year, despite having that ridiculous, ridiculous payroll. But
were you a Lindor for MVP guy?
Yeah, I was. But
okay.
I mean,
he's great this year.
Yeah, he is silly. Lindor has really changed things. And by the way, his backup, baby Acuna, Acuna's little brother, is also very, very talented.
Luis Angel?
Yeah, the Mets have it going this year. They are, you know, it's just one of those teams. This happens every year. It was Arizona last year. It just sometimes we talk about peaking, right? And towards the end of the season, especially, again, when you're talking about the national pastime, that being Major League Baseball, Sometimes someone just comes down from the baseball heavens and touches you on the forehead and anoints you as being that team. And the comebacks and just the confidence now that's on that team. That's going to be a fun series. I think it's going to be fun to see Shohei as we go along here, even if that Dodgers do get to the World Series, to see him in front of the bright lights. Meanwhile, his counterpart out in the American League, that being Aaron Judge, taking the pipe, man. He hasn't been very good. But
he's been terrible.
We'll do a lot more of that as we get into some Major League Baseball a little bit later in the show. But just want to stay with the San Francisco 49er talk for a moment here. As I mentioned, as we went to the break, the 925 on the text line said, the quarterback makes the system. It's not the other way around. Just see in Miami with Tua out. And obviously with Tua out, suddenly it's over. All right, the Miami Dolphins have no shot. And yeah, it was a team with so much promise that has just about everything, right? A good offensive line. We talked about Mostert. They got a running game. They've got Tariq Hill, arguably the best wide receiver in the game. It's a good defense, good enough to win. But you just remove one piece, and now suddenly it's a team that's not even sniffing the playoffs. I think, though, when you talk about the 49ers and a system, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, as much as I love him, he didn't take the Las Vegas Raiders to a Super Bowl, but he certainly did with the 49ers. Shanahan got Nick Mullins paid in this league. C.J. Beathard.
Still around.
Yeah, he's out there, I want to say, in Minnesota. Is he still backing up our man
somewhere,
Sam Darnold? C.J. Beathard was relevant for a couple of weeks, so I'll put it to you.
He backed up Trevor Lawrence last year.
Is it the system, and or is it the quarterback? How do you see things as it relates to the 49ers?
It might be the boring answer, but why can't it be both? For some quarterbacks, let's take Tua Tagovailoa, for example. Tua is a good quarterback. Hope he's healthy. You know, does what he can to keep himself upright or, you know, alive. He's, you know, the head injuries are scary. But the drop-off from Tua to Skylar Thompson and Tyler Huntley, that's a catastrophic fall from grace. Like, those are terrible quarterbacks that I know Tyler Huntley's a former Pro Bowler, if you will, but like, he probably shouldn't be in the league, and he wasn't until the quarterback injuries happened, whereas San Francisco was in the exact same situation with Brock Purdy, right? Jimmy G goes down, Trey Lance goes down, and obviously Tua's better than those quarterbacks for sure, but Brock Purdy steps up, and he's that quarterback three and takes the offense to new heights. But that doesn't take away from Kyle Shanahan's system being great. There's a reason why, I don't know, 10, 19-plus teams want to emulate that. They want to try to steal that system and make it their own. McVay, McDaniel, O'Connell, the teams that usually have success in the NFL are Shanahan-style schemes. But that is to say that Brock Purdy is probably the best quarterback playing in one not named Matthew Stafford. Like, what Brock has done, while yes, is in a great system, he also has made that system better and more explosive and just more efficient in his last 2.5 years. So does Tom Brady make Belichick's system, make McDaniel's system, or did those guys make Tom Brady? We saw what happened once Brady left. It was a quarterback. That was the biggest issue. But Mac Jones also had success for 1 year in that exact same system. So I think it's a boring answer, but the answer is both. The answer is both.
I think that, again, just to reiterate what I said earlier, that the perfect quarterback to run Kyle Shanahan's system is Brock Purdy, and Kyle Shanahan knows this. Hmm. He's been in search of who's going to be my trigger man. I tried Jimmy Garoppolo. He had limitations. I wanted Trey Lance to work. It never got off the ground. He's been through multiple quarterbacks, and finally he stumbles on his guy, and that is the best guy to execute what it is that Kyle Shanahan wants to do. And what's so funny about the conversation as to whether he's going to get paid, all the talk about Colin Cowherd and the Nick Wrights of the world, that he's not a top-tier quarterback. He's not a good quarterback. You can't put him in the conversation. Who the hell cares? If he's the best to execute Kyle Shanahan does not necessarily want a guy who's going to get back there and just rip it. He wants a guy who's going to stay within what it is that he wants executed, which is why he coveted someone like that of a Kirk Cousins. He does not necessarily need all the bells and whistles. But guess what? While he thought he was getting a system quarterback who was going to execute what it is that Kyle Shanahan wants to do in terms of his X's and O's, he got himself a guy that can also be a gunslinger. That when that system breaks down, It's not just throw it away and live to see another day. Uh-uh. This guy is, dare I say, he looks like, you know, he looks like a young Aaron Rodgers. And I know I'm biting off a lot there. But just think about Aaron Rodgers 5 years ago when he was the MVP. Or think about Aaron Rodgers when he took them to
a young 35-year-old Aaron Rodgers.
Well, okay, go back in the day when he went to that Super Bowl in Dallas and came up with his only Super Bowl victory. What did Aaron Rodgers do? Aaron Rodgers could run with the ball, certainly, but he just he would throw from different platforms. Now, he had maybe one of arguably the greatest release in the game and all of that sort of stuff that we pay attention to, but he bites Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger used to just buy time. It was very subtle, but he would just shift a foot to his left, a foot to his right, move up in that pocket, or get to the outside. They always talk about throwing from different platforms. The guy doing it better than anybody right now is Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy is extending plays like nobody else in the National Football League, and that has nothing, and I reiterate, nothing to do with the system. Where this guy is taking his game and where he's taking the 49ers, because let's face it, he's limited. Some of these guys, because of the injuries, aren't getting separation, the Chris Conleys of the world and the Juwan Jennings, so he has to buy more time. And the big question on him was, okay, what's going to happen? We can't afford to bring back Kittle, or Kittle loses a step, or Debo goes next year. What are you going to be then, Brock Purdy? Well, I think he's answering that question for everybody concerned. He'll be fine. The Niners will be fine. Why? Because this guy, despite being a seventh-round pick out of Iowa State and all those optics bothering somebody like me, has now convinced someone like myself that this guy is not only good, but he's legitimate and is worthy of being in the conversation of the best quarterbacks in the game.
I'll push back a little bit and say that Josh Allen and CJ Stroud are probably having better years than Brock Purdy. But, yeah, I think...
Who was the first quarterback you mentioned? Sorry.
Josh Allen and CJ Stroud. Both those guys are having a great year. I know Josh Allen has the hero ball issues and loses games
Josh Allen's
for his
last
teams,
game?
But... Yeah, but you know, one game out of the five he's played, he's looked pretty good. But I will say that when people talk about system quarterbacks, the one thing they'll say is, well, what is he if he goes elsewhere? In a different system, different OC, the weapons that Brock Purdy has lift him up, which undoubtedly they do. That's fine. That's no one's fault. It's not Brock's fault. But, you know, we saw him in the Rams game where he didn't have Debo, didn't have Kittle, didn't have CMC, and late in that game, had it not been for a Ronnie Bell drop pass or a Jake Moody missed field goal, they win that game. And, you know, those are big-time throws he's made to put San Francisco in the position to win. But, you know, I think we are past the point of thinking Brock can't succeed elsewhere in the off chance he leaves. If Brock plays elsewhere, whether it's Minnesota, whether it is in Houston, if it's in Philadelphia, I think he would succeed. Like, Brock is to a point of, no longer do we talk about, you know, well, if he plays XYZ place, not in San Francisco, I think he'll thrive. He's thriving now with the weapons he has. He's thriving now with the weapons he doesn't have. So, is Brock the elite of the elite? I don't think so. I don't think Brock is as good as Mahomes. I don't think on a great day he's good as Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow, and at times Josh Allen can be the best quarterback in the NFL, but Brock is certainly in that conversation of, you know, 6 through 10, in my opinion. He's played that good this year.
Yeah, I would say he's knocking on that door, if not in that conversation. And again, if Brock Purdy was 6 foot, doing the exact same thing, let's just say he was 6'4" and went to USC, I think he'd already be in that conversation. I think that he wouldn't be pimping out John Deere equipment. He'd be the front guy for Nike or give me any top brand. A lot of this just begins and ends of the fact that he looks like Case Keenum or that he looks like Nick Mullins. And a lot of us have to get, and I was one of those. And now I'm beginning to think that he's a small quarterback, but guess what? He's like Y.A. Tittle, or he's like Fran Tarkenton. Wow. These guys predate me. I never saw him play, but I'm just saying that he's now becoming a guy that is small, but is great. And it's, you know, obviously I'm getting ahead of myself, but he's breaking down some barriers here. And as a result, this man is going to get paid next year. Let's open up the phone lines officially. 888-957-9570 if you want to join us. Let's get out to our man Austin, who's standing by. Austin, who's taking the last couple of weeks off. Where you been, Austin? Welcome back.
Hey, what's up? What's up, my brother? Thanks, Dan. Thanks for your buddy there. Listen, for letting me on. I got to come at you a little bit I think that Brock, I was like you. I had a lot of doubts about Brock, and I still don't see him as elite. I see him as a very good quarterback. But I'm not ready to put him in the elite category. And you mentioned Rodgers in the same sentence as Brock. I mean, come on, let's pump the brakes. I mean, listen, has the kid had a good 2 years? Yeah, sure. Has he won some big games? Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers, I mean, listen, I know Aaron Rodgers is A's now, but come on, man. This dude was a four-time MVP or something. I mean, let's just wait. Let's just see what Brock becomes. And is he good for the – I think he still is the quarterback. I keep asking people, who's going to pay Brock $50 million? I know your partner said he thinks a lot of teams would, I guess. I'm not in that camp. I don't believe that – I think for the 49ers he's worth the money, but I'm not sure he's worth that money outside of the 49ers. I think that's where –
Interesting
conversation. And again, I could be sold otherwise, but right now I'm saying, hey, and Dan, how about my guy, Commanders? How about my Daniels guy? Man, I mean, he's
– That's good.
I mean, it's early. Listen, I'm trying to, you know, I'm a Commanders long line, you know, where we've been the last few years. So I'm trying to keep my composure. But right now, kid looks pretty damn good, man. So I'm hoping you can start talking about Daniels in the same conversation, maybe going forward. All right,
hey,
guys,
awesome.
I'll keep listening. Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. What would Brock have to do to prove to you that he's worth that $50, $60 million? He's not a system quarterback, if you will.
I think we lost him.
Maybe
you can answer that question, Sterling.
Well, I mean, so a lot of people online would say, well, he hasn't won the big one yet. And I'd point to, well, some guys you consider elite haven't even gotten to the big one. Josh Allen's never been there. Lamar Jackson's never been there. Joe Burrow got there and lost to Matthew Stafford. Only four active quarterbacks that are starting this year have won Super Bowls. Mahomes, Rodgers, Stafford, and Joe Flacco, who was a backup before last week. So it's not like what Brock hasn't done hasn't been uber impressive. I wouldn't put him in the young Aaron Rodgers camp, but he's playing like a non-Super Bowl winning Russell Wilson thus far with the worst arm, but even Brock's arm has gotten better through 2.5 years of playing. Is he elite? I wouldn't go that far, but what Brock's done success-wise has been on par, if not better, than quarterbacks we call the elites.
I think he's elite, and let me just clarify for the record what it is that I'm saying when I compare him to a young Aaron Rodgers. Can Aaron Rodgers throw a better ball? Yes. And I mentioned that. His release is probably one of a kind. Brock Purdy doesn't have that. And his accuracy, his ability to throw just about every pass on the route tree, Aaron Rodgers can do it. And again, with remarkable fluidity, that is not Brock Purdy. The comparison that I want to make between him, and I'll stand by it, is that a young Aaron Rodgers, I'm not talking about throwing the football. I'm talking about buying time. The reason why Aaron Rodgers is a mere shadow of himself in 2024 as this reclamation project with that of the New York Jets and why it's not going to work is because he can no longer do that. Aaron Rodgers was at his most dangerous when he would get an extend a play or get to another platform or get outside of that pocket. As soon as he sees pressure, much like that of Tom Brady when he got to the wrong side of 40, he's going down, all right? Or if there's pressure, he's throwing high. He doesn't have that same comfort as he once did. The comparison I'm making is with him, I'll even throw Ben Roethlisberger in there, that what you're watching from Brock Purdy in terms of extending plays, and not like that of Lamar Jackson, because Brock Purdy isn't looking, okay, the play is now broken down. I went through my progression. Time for me to run. Yeah. Running is the last option. What he's doing is looking to buy time so that his receivers can get separation. He's still looking to execute and throw the football down the field, much like that of Aaron Rodgers back in the day. The comparison that I'm making to Austin and everybody else out there that thinks I'm nuts when I throw them in the same conversation as Aaron Rodgers is that when you talk about making something out of nothing with your feet, we haven't seen this sort of ability until the likes. I would go back again to Ben Roethlisberger, who would do it. And again, we don't think of Ben Roethlisberger as being a guy fleet of foot, but look at Roethlisberger at the height of his career. That's what he did, and that's what made him effective. And Aaron Rodgers was the same way. Can he throw a ball like that of Aaron Rodgers, Brock Purdy? No. And I'm going to stop right there in terms of the comparison. But as far as extending plays, he's putting himself in an elite class. And I think that the Brock Purdy conversation as far as him not being in that top tier, maybe he's not Patrick Mahomes, but I think he's going to reset the market when it comes to getting paid, and he's going to make more money than anybody out there. And I think it's going to be, I would not be surprised if he continues on this trajectory if he's not in line for a $70 million contract.
70's a lot, but, I mean, hey, if guys are getting 65, Trevor Lawrence, who hasn't won a darn thing in his entire career, getting 60-plus. So it's like, why wouldn't Brock get that when he's done more and has made a lot less so far in his career? But I think what you're getting at, Dan, is, you know, it's not a direct comparison to quarterback, but it's more so saying that Brock is an underrated playmaker that should be in the conversation of or around the elite quarterbacks in football. Again, I wouldn't say he's Josh Allen. I wouldn't say that he's Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or even Joe Burrow at times because Burrow has a great arm, but Brock is so underrated, and the stature, the height, the weight, the way he looks lends people to not think he can do those things. He'll joke about his 10-yard split being better than, you know, Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel and Lamar Jackson's, which, you know, Brock's not going to be a long-distance runner and shake off, you know, 6-7 guys and throw a ball 70 yards downfield like Josh Allen may be able to do, but he'll get out of the pocket, he'll make two guys miss, he'll run for 5 or 6 yards and keep your drive alive, doing exactly what you want to do while in that same breath allowing the offense to run itself with Kyle Shanahan at the helm. So, again, you can go back all day. You know, is Brock a top 10 quarterback, this, that, and the other? But if he isn't to some people, you have to admit he's at least one of the best playmaking quarterbacks in football thus far in 2024.
888-957-9570 is the phone number. We have the lines officially open. Let's get back out to the phone lines and off to Oakland. And let's join Marlon, who gets in on the conversation. What's up, Marlon?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, buddy.
Pretty good.
I think Brock Purdy, if you want to compare him to somebody, you compare him to, I think I'm an Oakland Raider fan, so I think he's Rich Gannon.
Oh.
Let me let that marinate for a second. Rich Gannon, who went to a Super Bowl and then got smoked by
lost
that of the
my
Tampa
dad
Bay.
A ton of money playing squares in that Super Bowl.
Buccaneers just took it to him. Rich Gannon.
Won an MVP? Didn't he win an MVP?
Yes.
He did.
That was the
he
same
did.
Year.
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Martin, that's
okay.
Not bad, buddy.
And the reason why he got smoked is because, you know, Tampa Bay knew exactly what he was going to do. So that's the reason why he got smoked. So
that's true.
But I think Rich Gannon in his later years, I mean, he honed his skills. And I think Brock Purdy is right at that level. I don't think he's the best, you know, one of the best top five quarterbacks playing now. But I do think he's a good quarterback, and I think he can maybe one day win MVP or whatever the case is. But, you know, we'll see.
Marlon, I like the comparison, and I'm trying to just visually have my mind go back to the days of Rich Gannon. I guess Rich Gannon was a different type quarterback. I think he had sort of a stronger arm. I don't know that it's a different sort of skill set. And yeah. I want to say that Rich Gannon wasn't as mobile as Brock Purdy. We can let Marlon go. I don't know if Marlon's all online, but I think that it's interesting, Sterling. I'm going to say that Brock Purdy's upside and Brock Purdy's future is a lot brighter than that of Rich Gannon. Am I wrong?
I mean, if Purdy's Rich Gannon now, and he's only in year 2.5 or year 3, the upside should be a lot higher than that, right? People forget that Brock, coming off a UCL tear, almost won the MVP last year. I mean, yeah, do the weapons help him? Sure, but, you know, we've seen quarterbacks take 2, 3, 4, 5 years to click. Sam Darnold finally clicking in year, like, 7 in the NFL. You know, it's not as if that guys that don't play for 5 or 6 years can't have the other level in their game kind of met, right? We've seen guys peak early and then fall off a cliff in their career, but Brock has been this kind of the exact same guy, but incremental improvements year after year. I don't think Brock Purdy makes that throw to George Kittle in the end zone near the pylon pylon in the second half and the first drive of second half against Seahawks in year one. But in year three, the arm strength's gotten better to a point of he is fearless with the football, and those are traits you want. Guys that say, you know what, whatever. You know, if I make a mistake, that stinks, but I'm going to bounce back anyways. And I think for Brock, it's like all the risks that he usually takes are worth the reward for him. And whether it's Rich Gannon or not, Brock has proven to be, if he is the Rich Gannon comparison that Marlon says, well, the ceiling is way higher than that for Brock Purdy after this year.
Okay, I take it back. Marlon, where the hell are you? Marlon, are you out your damn mind? So, my man Rich Gannon was in the league for 14 years before he went to Oakland. I had no idea.
He was in Minnesota, right?
He was with Minnesota, and then he was with Kansas City for 4 years. And then he got to Oakland and obviously became that guy. But, yeah, I don't know if I can go there. I mean, he had been in the league for more than a decade before he enjoyed some success. So, yeah, to your point, Sterling, I think that Brock Purdy has his entire world in front of him and is doing it at a much, much younger stage than that of Rich Gannon. I forgot Gannon had been a grizzled veteran who had been in the league. That's right, all those years out there in Minnesota. And then he gets to then Oakland. And I think John Gruden had just left, I want to say, right? And was it Callahan that was coaching him that year? They went to that Super Bowl. I think it was Gruden that coached the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then Brooks was the MVP. And, of course, that was the last time we've seen the Raiders get to the big dance. Raiders are a whole other story. Sorry for what's going on there. Look, Devontae Adams wants to get traded. There's talk about him going to the New York Jets. Let me just say this for you Raider fans and anybody who likes Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams doesn't have it anymore. And to have Devontae Adams at age 32, like quarterbacks, wide receivers lose it faster probably than anybody. And I know in that, what was the HBO special, receivers? Like the two times he was open last year, he's kicking dirt and getting angry at Jimmy Garoppolo because he didn't get the ball. But there is the separation with Devontae Adams is not what it once was. So, I mean, if you're... I don't know, you're looking for a second round for Devontae Adams? Try again. I ain't doing that if I'm the New York Jets. But any Devontae Adams thought? Are you a Devontae Adams guy?
I like Devontae. I think that in the offseason, had it been, you know, Ayuk wants to get out of here, I think Devontae would have been a great replacement. But why did he quit on Oakland or, I guess, Las Vegas now? Like, why? You signed a brand new contract 5 months ago. Like, why do you want out now? Like, why'd you commit and then want out? He hasn't played almost all year. They're changing quarterbacks now from Minshew to O'Connell. Like, Devontae Adams is now a diva receiver. Not just a receiver, he's a diva now, which if I was a contending team not named the Jets, you can keep him far away from me.
All right, we got to get to a break. I want to continue the conversation with the 49ers and now take a look at their next opponent. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, here come the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll do that and much more. It's Sterling Bennett. It's Dan Avone. We continue on 95.7 The Game after this.